As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. You're going to hear that introduction a second time, but this is an addition. This is time travel. That's what kind of Saturday it was in college football. We had to time travel. The buzzing you hear right now is the turnover chainsaw. Oregon State has fired it up one final time. The Beavers are in victory formation as I speak at a basically empty LA Coliseum. Oregon State is finishing off a 45-27 win against USC. The first time Oregon State has won at USC since September 1960. Yes, the last time the Beavers won at the Coliseum, it was 6 weeks away from John F. Kennedy beating Richard Nixon in the election. That's how long ago that was. 45-27, Oregon State wins this game. The Beavers rushed 50 times for 323 yards. They averaged 6.5 yards a carry. Chance Nolan, the quarterback that they went to, basically halftime of the Purdue game, 15 of 19 for 213 yards, four TDs. That's an 11.2 yards per attempt average. This was a complete butt kicking. As I will say later in the show, you can't fire Clay Helton again. But whoever gets the USC job, you have a monumental task ahead of you. Guys, if you haven't read Bruce Feldman and Antonio Morales' story in The Athletic about how USC got here, by all means, check it out. If you're not subscribed to The Athletic, subscribe to read it. You will understand better why USC's in the position it's in. But whoever gets that job, you got to fix USC at the line of scrimmage because they are getting just whipped up front. So, why am I here by myself? Well, I let Ari Wasserman go to bed, but we got to take care of our West Coast listeners. So we're tagging this thing on the beginning of the show. Oregon State crushes USC. Meanwhile, in Eugene, if you're just waking up, you saw the final score was Oregon 41, Arizona 19. You're like, ah, no big deal. Well, that game was 24-19 Oregon when the fourth quarter started. Jordan McLeod, the USF transfer who started for Arizona on Saturday night, had a pretty good game. The offense with Jordan McLeod running it was pretty effective, and Oregon had a rough time stopping Arizona on the ground. So it's going to be, I say that on the ground, had a rougher time stopping Arizona early on through the air and on the ground, then tightened up as the game went on. The final score, again, not indicative of how close it was for the first three quarters. Oregon, as my friend Dan Rubenstein, the Oregon graduate, often says, win your clunkers. They won this clunker, but they've got to go to Stanford next week. We'll see how they handle a team that is pretty good at the point of attack. But Oregon is the Pac-12's best chance for a playoff team. I'd say they have a very good chance to make the playoff the way things are going. Clemson taking its second loss. It doesn't look like the ACC is going to be able to put a team in there. Ohio State whipped up on Akron, but again, it's Akron. The Big Ten still feels pretty open. Oklahoma looked really shaky against West Virginia. Oregon, with a win in hand at Ohio State, if they can just go 8-1 through the Pac-12, I think Oregon's in the playoff. But the Ducks, little room for concern, but they also averaged 6 yards a carry. Travis Dye carried 5 times for 92 yards. This is an 18.4-yard average. I think the Ducks are going to be okay. But another crazy Pac-12 after dark, which capped off an incredibly crazy Saturday in college football. Let's talk about all that happened with Ari Wasserman right now. That is the reggaeton horn of chaos, because that's what we got on Saturday. Let me before I introduce Ari Wasserman and bring him on to gloat about all of the very accurate predictions he made on Friday, let me just run down the list here of the things we need to talk about here in the next, I don't know, we might be here 3 hours. Clemson loses to NC State. Oklahoma survives West Virginia. Arkansas beats Texas A&M. Notre Dame beats Wisconsin. Georgia Tech crushes North Carolina. Baylor beats Iowa State. Michigan State and BC win in crazy overtime games. Rutgers covers at Michigan. An Ohio State linebacker quit the team mid-game, we think, maybe. LSU wins by 3 and the death chip is off the table for me. Auburn nearly loses to Georgia State, benches Bo Nix, gets bailed out by the refs, and now TJ Finley may be starting at LSU next week. Georgia could have won by 1 million. Texas hangs 70 on Texas Tech, and here's where I'm going to bring in Ari Wasserman to predict a national title for the Longhorns. Hi, Ari.
Are they the best team in the Big 12 or what? Like, that's the best thing that could have happened for me, right? That was the last Saturday that I will ever be without a daughter, and I can't tell you. I thought my life was going to be crazy next week. Tell me what's crazier than that. I don't even know where to begin. All. Where do you even begin with that?
I say we start in Raleigh. Let's start in Raleigh, because if this had happened any other year and it didn't have the prelude that we had, we'd be going nuts because Clemson lost a regular season game in the ACC for the first time since 2017. That's not true. They lost to Notre Dame last year in what was an ACC game at the time. But this one wasn't as surprising because we've seen Clemson struggle on offense, but still actually seeing it, especially after NC State misses the not quite chip shot, but almost a chip shot field goal at the end of regulation and has to go to overtime. I mean, that was wild. And does Clemson have anybody healthy left to play the rest of the way?
I know that this is like the Ari Wasserman gloating episode, but don't tell everybody that. Yes. I didn't call Clemson missing the playoff this year before the season started on this show. And I don't know if this was the way it was supposed to manifest in my mind, because listen, Clemson got a bad rap, losing two very important pieces to their team in the middle of that game. And, you know, maybe if those two players are out there, you know, Will Shipley and Brian Brzee, I can never pronounce that man's name right, so forgive me. And even if I know what it is, I can't
say
it right.
I believe it's Brzee. And Brzee. Remember, they were already without one of their best defensive tackles. So when he goes down, you're missing your two starting defensive tackles. Then Shipley goes down, you're missing your best back. Yeah, it got to be pretty rough there for Clemson.
The question I had for you before the year started, and I'll ask you again, is the Dabo Swinney way sustainable in modern day college football? The way that he recruits, the no transfers thing, the no official visits after you, no visiting after you commit, like all the things that he does, you know, and they're still the fourth most talented team in college football this year. But in a world where they don't have a stark advantage at quarterback anymore, the way that they used to with Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson, their team isn't as stacked as an Alabama or an Ohio State. I just don't know if this team right now, unless they change some things, is just a sustainable model for winning every single year, no matter what, in college football. And I'm not saying they're not a great program or they're never going to win a national title again or they're not going to make the playoff. But Clemson was on that plane of every single year, no matter what happened, no matter what turnover they had, no matter who left, whatever, that they were going to be one of the best teams in college football and run through the ACC like it's no problem. And it's like, now look at them. They're already two losses and we're not even a quarter of the way through the season yet. So it's just like, that's just where I think this is a very critical juncture for Clemson, don't you? Of like, not just how they finish this year, but where they go as a crossroads of the program. Am I overreacting? Yeah,
no, you're not overreacting, but I do think the fix is a little simpler than you think. Start taking transfers. Like, if you think your offensive line is going to be a little shaky, cherry pick some good offensive linemen out of the transfer portal. They'll be thrilled to go to Clemson. So yeah,
it's got to change.
That thing fixes itself. Yeah, that part fixes itself. That's all you got to do. Cherry pick some transfers, shore up the weak spots, and do exactly what Lane Kiffin was saying Nick Saban can do now, because you can do that too if you're Dabo Swinney.
Clemson finished number 5 in the recruiting rankings in 2021. They had 3 5-star players, 14 4-stars. Alabama had 7 5-stars and 16 4-stars. Ohio State had 7 5-stars and 13 4-stars. That might not seem like a difference, but that's a difference of what? 6 or 7 high-end blue-chip prospects. That's the difference between them and Alabama and Ohio State. You do that over a course of a 4-year period, that's 25 less elite-level players that you have on your roster in a given time. And I know that they Clemson and Dabo for sure are the best talent evaluators. I think we've said that and given them their due for that. And they do things their own way. But I'm just wondering, like, as things go, their last 2 exits from the college football playoff were in blowout fashion. Granted, one was in the national championship game, and now they're going to miss the playoff. You know, I think 99% likely they're going to miss it this year. And I wonder if Clemson is going to be Clemson, or they're going to take a step back on the national scale, especially if Georgia continues to do what they're doing this year and maybe Oregon makes the playoff. I mean, it just seems like a very critical juncture for their program.
Yeah. And again, you can shore up some weak spots by just starting to take some transfers. But
do you buy the quarterback thing, though? Do you buy them with the quarterback thing? Like, the 2 years that Clemson won the national championship, they had Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson. And it's like, if you look at the quarterbacks that the other programs are recruiting now, Ohio State's got 3 top 100 quarterbacks on their roster. You know, the Bryce Youngs of the world are at Alabama now. Georgia, back-to-back years with 5-star quarterbacks. I'm not sure that they have that advantage anymore. So, like, just that alone to me is a major, major thing. So if they don't have the talent across the board and they don't have a distinct quarterback advantage anymore, because DJ isn't an advantage, he might be a liability at this point. I just wonder, like,
they may be getting Arch Manning there, Ari.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I realize that's 2023, but I think there's a real good shot they get Arch Manning. So, yeah, I don't.
Maybe this is an overreaction. I don't know.
They're recruiting fine at quarterback. They just need to block better.
It's not that they're not recruiting fine at quarterback, it's that everybody else is now too.
That's fine. But they need to recruit better on the offensive line. That is undeniable. But the thing is, if you can't develop and if you can't recruit and develop that quickly, good news. There will be plenty of offensive linemen who, if they have the chance to go to Clemson, will happily go to Clemson, who've already proven themselves in college. So the best evaluating staff in America can just say, hey, you know what? That guy is good. He's on our team now.
You are the king. You know what your mantra is, and I love you for it because I think it's true. But you always say, just because things are true now doesn't mean they're always going to be true, right? That's like your thing. So
the thing that just happened isn't the only thing that ever happened.
Yeah, and it's not the only thing that's ever going to happen forever. It's the same thing as like the stock market. If the stock market's up, it always feels like when it's up that it's never going to go down again. And then when it's going down, it never feels like it's going to go up again. But I just feel like Clemson is a program that did the thing that nobody else has really done, which has gone from a solid program to an elite one. I just wonder if they have a harder time sustaining it because of that, than they would be for programs like Oregon, Alabama or Ohio State, and teams that are built the way that they're built based on geography and long-term tradition, if that makes sense.
Oregon went from solid to elite to not good to back to solid to back to elite. So it's doable. It's doable. It happens.
But do you think they're in danger of going to being just good?
They're just good now.
Yeah, but for multiple years. Like, there's a difference, in my opinion, between...
I don't know. This may just be a down year. It's interesting because we haven't seen them have a down year in a while. Like, the last time they weren't this good was when Florida State was in the middle of going undefeated for essentially almost two full seasons. You know, going from the beginning of 2013 until they lost to Oregon in the playoff in 2014. That's the last time Clemson has looked mortal or normal. So it's been a really long time. We don't know what they're going to do.
Everything
has changed since then. Early signing period, transfer portal, NIL, you name it. All that stuff has changed since then. So we don't know what they're going to, we don't know how they're going to respond or how they're going to react.
I really like playing this game because seasons are weird sometimes. Teams miss playoff, whatever. It happens. One-off years happen. But I like to play program rankings, not current team rankings. And Clemson, two or three years ago, was undoubtedly maybe number one. You know, they were the team that was in danger of knocking, like Alabama was in danger of slipping. They missed the playoff. Clemson won a national championship. And you're like, oh my God, Clemson is undeniably the number one program in college football. And now it's just like, they're third for sure, probably, right? And they're slipping even more. So you have another year like this next year, and it's just like, where does Clemson fall in the program rankings? And I'm sorry for ranting about this because we're 11 minutes and 30 seconds into recording and we haven't gotten to the 19 other things on the list, but I think this is a really, really important time in a world where this season is going off the rails. It's going to have chaos all over the place. If one of the elite untouchable teams of the last 5, 6, 7 years is actually susceptible to falling in the program rankings.
Yeah. Well, and look, they're probably out. That's a team that usually makes the playoff, that has made the playoff, every year since 2016?
That's right.
Or 2015. Excuse me, every year since 2015. Yeah. So they've made all but one playoff, just like Alabama has made all but one playoff. I think it's very safe to say that Clemson's not going to make it this year. That means maybe some new blood's getting in. That's interesting. That's fun. Let's move to Norman, Oklahoma. Where
perfect segue, but you're a veteran at this.
West Virginia. Okay. I am not going to pile on West Virginia's poor center. That dude is dealing with enough right now.
That was brutal.
I'm also not going to pile on Neil Brown for changing up quarterbacks because that was working. Putting Green in, running the read option with him, and having a change of pace from Daigie, it was working when they were doing it. So I'm not going to kill them for that in the fourth quarter in Oklahoma territory, but it did probably mess with the center's timing. That's where you get a snap infraction on one play. You change quarterbacks again. Then you get a 21-yard loss on a bad snap. That probably cost them the game. Now, I don't know that they
probably
still won.
They were like on the edge of field goal range. Yeah.
No, but they probably kick a field goal, and Oklahoma probably kicks a field goal, and then they go to overtime, and maybe West Virginia wins, maybe they don't. If that game's in Morgantown, I'm pretty sure West Virginia wins that game. I am not confident in Oklahoma at all under any circumstances. And I had Oklahoma playing for the national title in the preseason. I have no confidence in them to even win the Big 12.
What's wrong with their offense?
It does not get the ball into the end zone. They don't run the touchdown play like they used to.
That's like the one thing that I never thought would happen. It's like, okay, Oklahoma's defense is, I mean, what was the final score of that game? 16-13? What world are we living in?
Yeah, Oklahoma's defense is saving them. Imagine if this was the Oklahoma defense of 3 years ago. Oklahoma's defense is saving them.
It's anarchy.
Yes. Yes, it is cats and dogs living together. It's insane. But that's exactly what this is. That's exactly what's going on. Without that defense being as good as it's been, they've lost two games already. Maybe they might have lost three. They might be 1-3 right now.
Yeah, Okay, so I guess this is another segue, I guess, to continue to talk about Oklahoma, but who's the best team in the Big 12 right now?
You're going to say Texas, and I'm going to disagree with that because I watched them get smoked by Arkansas, and I'm not sure how well they'll handle a physical game.
Segway to Arkansas?
No, we're not segwaying. We're not done with Oklahoma yet. I'm trying to look up the stats. My iPad is killing me right now, but I'm trying to look up the stats on the Oklahoma-West Virginia game. You asked what's wrong with the offense. I think there's a couple things. There's no CeeDee Lamb type, D.D. Westbrook type, just way better than everybody else receiver on the field. That person's not there for them this year. They're not running the ball as well as they should be. They have had dominant offensive lines. They've been thin at tailback. Because think about all the weird stuff that's happened with them with tailbacks over the years. So like it's been a while since they've been stocked at that position. But like, okay, here's the rushing attack for Oklahoma, and I will say, West Virginia's defensive line with Stills and Akeem Mesidor is really good. Like that is one of the most pleasant surprises of this season is how good West Virginia's D-line is. Oklahoma ran the ball 28 times for 57 yards. Their longest run on Saturday night was 9 yards. Like the thing that has differentiated Oklahoma other than having a CeeDee Lamb type or a DeeDee Westbrook type or having Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts at quarterback is they have been able to run the ball at will on everyone. And they can't do that.
Did you hear that they were calling for Caleb Williams?
I heard it. You could hear it. The student section was doing it. Holly Rowe addressed it. You could hear it on the Oklahoma radio broadcast. I mean, it was plain as day.
This is the Heisman favorite coming into the year.
And potential number one draft pick, which he's not obviously going to be the number one draft pick. I mean, I think we've probably settled that already.
And it's like also at the receiver position, too. It's like, wasn't Marvin Mims supposed to be that? Wasn't Mario Williams a really bright young star? Like, they were supposed to have the talent at that position, too. So, you know, maybe not the CeeDee Lamb type, because we're talking about one of the best, you know, young receivers in the NFL now. But it's just like, it's just weird to me. And
you know who the best receiver on the field was? Bryce Ford Wheaton was the best receiver on the field. He plays for West Virginia.
Yes. It's weird. Yeah. It's just like, and that's the thing too, when you start talking about these sort of things, you know, it's like early season woes and close games and close calls. But when you start questioning personnel, as you like to say, that travels, you know, if you're in a situation where you're not sure about what you have, at the skill position players at Oklahoma, I don't know how we got there because they recruit the heck out of the position. And they've got a lot of young, really good players on their team. Kennedy Brooks, too, is a really underrated running back. I just don't know.
Yep.
You know, and Lincoln Riley is an offensive genius, right? Like, is that too strong?
Yeah.
Genius? So I just...
genius is a good word for it. I mean, he's found a way to make it work. Because Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, all very different quarterbacks that Lincoln Riley maximized. Now, they're all really good quarterbacks, as evidenced by the fact that they're all starting in the NFL right now. But he found a way to get the most out of all of those guys. He's not getting the most out of Spencer Rattler, or Spencer Rattler was misevaluated and Spencer Rattler's at his ceiling. I don't know what the answer to this. My guess is Spencer Rattler would look a lot better and did look a lot better at the end of last season when Oklahoma was running the ball really well. So if they can't do that, then they're going to have problems. Let me ask you this, Ari, and we will bring in your favorite underachievers. Is Red River going to be a rock fight this year?
I don't know. Here's the other thing I'll say before we go to Red River, which is in 2 weeks. Oklahoma is going to Kansas State next week. I don't think that's an easy game. I know they lost to Oklahoma State on Saturday.
Kansas State that has beaten Oklahoma 2 years in a row?
Yeah, on the road. In the Kansas State that also was a fringe top 25 team. Were they top 25 this week? You know, they got some talent.
They beat Stanford week one, looked really good. But they had some injuries, and yes, Oklahoma State beat them on Saturday. So, but yes, Oklahoma could absolutely look, like I said, had Saturday's game been in Morgantown, Oklahoma loses. Manhattan is not an easy place to play.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't know what the spread is there, but you know, I'm taking the points.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Let's gloat on you a little bit, Ari. You and I had a good day in Friday's podcast, you especially, because I believe we both said take NC State with the points. We said take the Arkansas money line, and Arkansas did win outright, which I had A&M fans during the week coming after me for something I wrote in the mailbag, because I'd said if A&M can't find a way to score, they're going to struggle to win this game, which seems fairly elementary. The only team of consequence they had played was Colorado, and they scored all of 10 points against them. Colorado then proceeds to lose 30-0 to Minnesota, which should have set off some more alarm bells in Aggieland. But they were like, no, no, that defense is going to carry. Oh, no, it didn't, because the defense had two busts, and you lost because you couldn't score.
Yeah. What's going on there? What's going on there, Mr. SEC? I have no idea.
Well, I know, just judging by the fans and their frustration, they were frustrated that it felt like Jimbo Fisher kept trying to throw their way out of this when handing it to Isaiah Spiller was the one thing that got them in the end zone. And Spiller... Look, Arkansas's defense was playing really well, but there were times when Spiller looked like he could, he reads holes so well, and he'd look bottled up and he'd gain like 6 yards. Like, just keep feeding him. Feed Devon Achane. Like, feed those guys, because those guys can turn a hole into a touchdown, just like Isaiah Spiller did that one time. But Calzada just could not handle the defense that Barry Odom was throwing at. And what that was they're going to rush three, and he'll have time to throw because it's going to be 5-on-3 blocking. But eventually some defensive lineman's going to pop free. Calzada's going to move out of the pocket. Once he moves out of the pocket, the nearest safety's going to come running straight at him and force him to throw, and he's going to overthrow it, underthrow it, or do something else. That's exactly what happened 50% of the times they drop back.
Can I ask you, isn't this exactly what you thought it would look like?
After watching Colorado, is pretty similar to what I thought it would look like. And look, it's interesting because LSU, just having played an air raid team, and we watched LSU beat an air raid team on Saturday, like, SEC West defenses, because they have to play against Mike Leach, like, really understand the concept now of dropping eight. That's all anybody's going to do against you unless you prove you can run the ball, or unless you decide, hey, we can't, because I don't even know if they need to prove, like, they can run the ball. And I realize A&M had offensive line issues and there were injuries and they kept having to move Kenyon Green around. But Arkansas had offensive line injuries coming into the game too. So there's no excuse here. Like, and this is what I told those guys, because they're like, you're being too hard on A&M. Because they struggled in one game. I said, no. You want to be considered national championship contenders. You have to get judged by big boy standards now. And they're just not good enough. Now, they may be good enough. They may have the talent. But the play calling plus the talent isn't working right now. I would guess if, you know, when Jimbo Fisher looks at this game, he's going to go back and say, you know what? Probably should just try to run the ball a little more. Try to set up some play action. Because they're so talented in the backfield, and they do have very athletic offensive linemen, even though some of them are young. Like, when you watch that Isaiah Spiller touchdown, like, it just, the Red Sea parted. It was beautiful blocking. I think they can fix it. I don't think they're going to be a team that throws a bunch or that rules through the air. They need to be a team that wins on the ground.
I thought Arkansas looked bigger, faster, stronger, and more intense the entire game.
I disagree with that. I thought Texas A&M's offensive line and defensive line looked very athletic. I was very impressed with them. Now, I will say some of Arkansas's players were better probably than I realized they were. And, you know, KJ Jefferson, man, that dude is tough because he kept trying to come back in that game. And when Hornsby was in, you knew there wasn't much they could do. So Jefferson had to come back in, and he did at the end, and they salted the game away by him completing a few passes, which I think really was very impressive. Now, how healthy will he be when they play Georgia? I have no idea. I think this may be one where they got beat up so bad that Georgia may make them look very different than what we've seen so far.
But, I'm just going to ask
Trey Williams.
Andy.
What?
And I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm going to...
Cut away.
You and everybody else, rightfully, I might say, make fun of me for my Texas view.
Mm-hmm.
Something doesn't add up at Texas. We can agree, right?
We definitely can agree.
Can we say the same exact thing about A&M?
We can now. We couldn't before they lost to Arkansas, but we can now because... I don't know how good Arkansas is. We'll have a very good idea next week how good Arkansas is. They've got to play Georgia in Athens. I was just mentioning Trey Williams, who's a fantastic pass rusher, but can he get around Georgia's offensive line? That's another question. Can Arkansas run the ball on Georgia? That is a very tough question. But Texas A&M being unable to beat Arkansas means they are not in the class that they wanted to be in. They wanted to be a national title contender. If they can't beat Arkansas, then it calls into question whether they can beat LSU, obviously Alabama, Georgia. So these are all teams that they would have to beat.
Like, but let me be more specific.
If you're them, you now need to be able to beat Georgia too, because you have to beat everybody.
I don't just mean this year. I just mean program.
No, because I think last year they were moving in the right direction. They were in a good place.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think it's a program thing. I think they need to have a probably better quarterback play, which I think they thought they were going to get from Haynes King, and then he got hurt. But you got to stack quarterbacks. Alabama stacked. When Tua Tagovailoa went down, Alabama replaced him with another first-round quarterback. Now, they had no idea he was a first-round quarterback when Mac Jones replaced Tua, but they had him there. You know, when these programs lose somebody, they've got somebody else ready. You know, Ohio State at one point had Dwayne Haskins and Joe Burrow sitting on the bench. So that's how you have to do it.
Because like, I love what Texas A&M has. I like what they're bringing in. I like what they've done in the Houston area. They have the nuts and bolts, in my opinion. And in the Stars Matter podcast, the new recruiting podcast that's on your beautiful Andy Staples show feed, we discussed which teams are the next in line to shake the hierarchy, and we both agreed, Mitch Light and I, that Texas A&M was the next team. And I don't know if this year was just a year too early.
I agree with both of you because they are getting it done on the line of scrimmage and recruiting. So
is it like next year that – when does it have to happen, though, before you give up? Because you've given up on Texas.
I've given up on Texas until they decide to get it all together. And – they might eventually get it all together. A&M is a special quarterback away. Like, a special quarterback playing at A&M on Saturday
wins the game.
A&M beats Arkansas.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. And they've got a five-star quarterback from Houston, Connor Wegman, coming in next year. So it'll be very interesting to see how he adapts to the role. But, you know, Texas A&M's also had some other top 100 quarterbacks go there that haven't panned out. So, you know, it's...
Right, but...
It's just...
But that's not just a Texas A&M thing.
No, I know.
How many top 100 quarterbacks don't pan out? A lot don't pan out.
I just had high hopes for them this year. And I thought that they actually were going to give Alabama a game and that they were going to be the team that built off of being a fringe playoff team a year ago. So, like, the fact that they're kind of just, what are they, 2 weeks removed from playing Bama and already have a loss, and it's just like, oh, God. All right, maybe next year. You know, and it's just like a tough thing to swallow.
They still might beat Alabama, but I doubt it.
I don't think so.
And now I don't know if they can beat LSU, and now I don't know if they can beat Ole Miss, and now I don't, I mean, that's just, the SEC West is really hard. It's really, really hard. So, Let's move on a little bit.
But did you get confidence in Arkansas? You think Arkansas can play with Georgia next week? Because I do. I said on the podcast on Friday, if Arkansas wins the game outright, I'm taking the points no matter what the spread is. And I stand by that.
I'm curious to see what the spread's going to be. I also want to know what Treylon Burks' injury situation is, because he looked like he was in a lot of pain when he went off the field. And if they
don't
have
him, he's one of their most important players.
That's a big blow. Before we move on to the other heavyweight games, let's talk about Georgia. Georgia could have won. Like, they could have competed with the Georgia Tech Cumberland College score against Vanderbilt. Like, they could have competed with 222-0 if they'd wanted to.
Should they have started the running clock at the beginning of the second quarter in this one?
Probably with about 6 minutes to go in the first quarter would have been a good time to do that.
Man, I feel bad for Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt beat Colorado State. Vanderbilt beat the Colorado State team that almost beat Iowa. Like, it's a weird,
sport. Is bonkers.
But Georgia is off the charts good. You talked to Shane Beamer last week about his answer to that crazy question, and it was a great answer. What he told you was fantastic, and it's true. They are absurdly talented, and offensively, it feels like things are clicking into place. As you know, they still don't have everybody back. That's the other part of it. So, if Arkansas was completely healthy, if KJ Jefferson's healthy, if Treylon Burks is healthy, then yes, I'm giving Arkansas a chance going into this game. If they're banged up, I'm scared that we're going to say, oh, no, Arkansas wasn't that good because Georgia just dump trucked them. But I don't think that's the case. I think Arkansas is very good. I just think they're catching Georgia at a really bad time. But that is sort of the other problem that we talked about with the SEC West. And I realize Georgia's not in the West. But if you've got Georgia on the other side of your schedule or you've got Florida on the other side of your schedule, you could be really beat up from some of the games you've played and then have to go play them, and it's even worse.
I don't know if it's just like human nature as a sports writer, but Georgia has a very favorable schedule this year.
Oh, 100%. This is why we keep saying this is the path. It's open.
This is the beginning of the only toughest stretch that Georgia has on their entire schedule. They start with Arkansas next weekend, then a road game at Auburn, which... Maybe that's not a tough game anymore. Home game against a sneaky, talented, good...
Georgia State almost won at Auburn. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, I don't know if we just automatically assume that games at Auburn are tough, but, you know, I'll let the listener decide. And then they got a tough game at home against Kentucky, who I think is much improved and is a pretty solid team. And then they have their lovely game against Florida. That four-game stretch is certainly manageable for a team who's a national championship contender. But that is the toughest four-game stretch on Georgia's schedule. And I don't know if we're talking ourselves into Arkansas being a game because we want to see, you know, Georgia play against a very, very good team. I don't know if the Clemson loss gave us more context to what their win over Clemson. I don't know that I buy into that. That was week one. Clemson was healthy. You know, both had their best shot out there. But, like, if they get through these four games and they beat Arkansas, what's the toughest game left? Florida, without question. And then maybe Florida will get
them. But Arkansas at 100%, yes, I think that's a tough game for Georgia. Arkansas banged up, maybe not as tough. But listen, at this point, should we doubt Sam Pittman in the least? I don't think we should. Because let's remember, for 2018 and 2019, Arkansas did not win a single SEC game. And Sam Pittman came in and completely turned that around. You know, they've beaten Texas and Texas A&M this season. They beat Ole Miss last season. They should have beaten Auburn last season. Like, this is a complete program turnaround. This is not a walkover game for Georgia, even with Arkansas banged up. But I am obviously going to lean heavily toward Georgia because I just think with if KJ Jefferson's not 100%, if he's not as much of a threat to run, if Burks is out or is limited, I don't know how you score on them. That's the problem. Because this is take that A&M defense and just ratchet it up a couple notches. That's the couple kind of notches, athletes we're talking about.
I don't know if the Chiefs could score on this team.
We won't get into that debate, but no, I mean it is very interesting. Let's move out of the SEC. We go to Chicago, Soldier Field. Wisconsin and Notre Dame are in a rock fight for three quarters, and then Notre Dame just blows them out in the fourth quarter. Do you know who the happiest team in America was Saturday?
Was you going to say Notre Dame?
The Cincinnati Bearcats were the happiest team in America because they're off. Notre Dame got beat up. Notre Dame is now still undefeated, and now we think Notre Dame's really, really good.
It set up perfectly for them. You're right.
Yeah, because now Cincinnati's going to drag them into another rock fight. I don't know who's going to win. It's at Notre Dame Stadium. I think now Notre Dame will be favored after what we saw in the fourth quarter against Wisconsin. But I think this will be a really good game. And I think, you know, if Notre Dame has any residual just pounding that they took from Wisconsin, which Wisconsin's not really pounding you up front. They're not running the ball very well at all, but it's still a tough game that was kind of a slugfest for three quarters. I think that really sets up nicely for Cincinnati.
Yeah. I actually think Cincinnati's going to win the game. I'm not fooled. I think Notre Dame is above average. I'm not going to put them in the great category. And I've got a question for you. At what point are we allowed to start questioning whether or not Wisconsin needs to change its like identity as a program? Like, and I don't know if it's just, maybe that'll never happen. Like the smash mouth freak offensive line, talented running back, old school offense is what they are. But like, maybe today was the last day that we should view their offensive philosophy as acceptable. Like the best quality that we say for college football coaches that there is.
Just throw it out. It's been working since Barry got there in like 1990.
I'm not saying just throw it
just
out.
Throw
I'm
it
just
out.
Saying.
Throw it out.
But what's the best quality of college football coaches that we say? It's being able to adapt.
And they have adapted defensively. They have adapted defensively. They went to a 3-4, and that's why you saw them have success with Aranda, and they've had success with Jim Leonard, because that it helps you with a 3-4 allows you to take more tweeners. You don't need those perfect archetypes on the line that the four-man front teams have. But here's the thing. Wisconsin also is usually playing at its ceiling. There will be years when that ceiling is just not high enough. This may be one of those years. They just might not be that good at opening holes.
I know that it's blasphemy to suggest what I'm saying, especially considering the fact that they've gone and out and won 8 to 10 games every single year without much sweating, you know, and they are what they are. But I feel like Wisconsin fans also have an idea of, hey, we would like to win the Big Ten, or hey, we would like to beat top 25 teams from other conferences with regularity. And it just like adaptability is so important. But for Wisconsin and their archaic offensive philosophy, it's like charming. And I don't know why you can't run the ball and be smash mouth out of different formations or spread it out a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of really good spread teams that can run the football really well.
They've done that over the years. They brought in more. They're not running an up-tempo spread, but they've spread the field more. Just like every NFL team has spread the field more.
It's like they didn't have an offense. They didn't have an offensive line. Their running back isn't dynamic. And Graham Mertz is just like not who we thought he was. So maybe that's the problem. But, you know, if you're Wisconsin and this is your identity, I find it inexcusable that you would have a game where you don't feel like your offensive line is very good.
Ari, Wisconsin's going to have down years every once in a while. When you're playing at your ceiling and you're playing against teams like Notre Dame, and you're being judged against teams like Notre Dame and Ohio State that have higher ceilings than you, there are going to be years where you just aren't good enough. It's going to happen. You just kind of have to accept that.
Yeah, I mean, but like, I just don't know if I can accept any year of Wisconsin not having a good offensive line. Like, if that's who you are as a program.
I think that's a legitimate thing. And whether that's a development thing or an evaluation thing, I'm not entirely sure. But you're right. They should be better up front.
If that's your identity, that's it. That's like either if that's who you are and you don't want to move anything. And like I understand, too, it's a pretty radical thing to say Wisconsin should change what they've been doing successfully for the past 30 years. I don't even know if it's rational. It was just a moment of thought while watching the game. And it's just like to me, if you are that and that's what you are, then even during your down years, you still should be running the ball pretty well. Like that's the only thing that you should be doing.
You will run the ball pretty well against not Notre Dame.
They were playing the Green Bay Packers out here. I mean,
here's the thing. We're going to find out how well they run the ball next week. They play Michigan. We watched Michigan against Rutgers. What did we say? It felt like Rutgers was going to cover on Friday. We said that 20 and a half. Rutgers lost by 7. We said, we got to see if Michigan can throw. It kind of looked like they could for about a quarter and a half. And then their offense just completely stalled out. So my guess is that Wisconsin defense is going to put the Wisconsin offense in some pretty good situations next week. It's going to be up to that Wisconsin offense to cash in. And we'll see where they're at. Maybe Notre Dame just has a really good defensive front.
Yeah,
maybe Penn State just has a really good defensive front. I suspect they do.
Before the season started, we said that this game on October 2nd would be the season-defining game for Michigan. And at this point now, I'd be surprised if they lost to Wisconsin. Like I'm like firm, and I know Michigan didn't have the sexiest win against Rutgers on Saturday, but, you know, at the same time, you know, Rutgers has a very good defensive-minded coach. You know, they were winning 20-3 at halftime. You know, they only got, like, what, 9 offensive plays for the first quarter and a half of the second half. You know, they didn't really feel themselves, but I don't know that the alarm bells are going off for Michigan. I think that right now, based on what I've seen, that Michigan's just a better football team than Wisconsin. And the thing that I don't understand about Wisconsin, and maybe it's as simple as this, is just the quarterback production is just not there. And I don't know why not.
You're Mr. Stars Matter, and you're realizing that maybe Jack Cohn was better than Graham Mertz, despite the fact that he didn't have as many stars.
I'm not realizing. I mean, listen, the head coach at Wisconsin, there was a quarterback battle. Who won?
Well, Jack Cohn got hurt. You had to pick somebody.
I know.
After that season, so you picked the younger person. So that's what happened. I would say they were probably pretty close. I doubt that there was a lot of separation there.
I know, but Mertz was
judging
playing
by the way they two play.
He might not be. I'm not saying he's Brett Favre, but like it was brutal to watch. I'm not trying to pile on it, but it was like brutal.
It was not good.
When Mertz went to Wisconsin, I thought he was going to be the talent that was going to elevate them into winning these games with ease and actually having a chance to win the Big Ten. It's like, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Now, and again, I'm not giving up on them yet because it may just be Notre Dame has a really good defensive front. Penn State has a really – I'm pretty sure Penn State does. Like, I feel very confident about that at this point. So I'm not giving up on Wisconsin yet. You've given up on the entire philosophy. You're going to call Barry Alvarez and like, dude, it's time. You had your time.
I'm not saying they should go out there and run Hawaii spread. I'm just saying.
The blueprint you created is gone. You've retired. Now that you're not there anymore to come in and coach bowl games, we got to get rid of everything you brought.
Can you?
Sorry, Barry.
If you're a Wisconsin person, though, and tell me if I'm just full of crap, and I'll accept it. But okay, is there a way to maintain your philosophy and be what you've always been and recruit the same way and put the, but just spruce it up a little bit offensively? Or do you absolutely just have, that's all no, I'm saying. Possible. I'm not saying and go run five wide every play.
But you are thinking they need to, the problem is with the skill positions. The problem is not with the skill positions. The problem is the thing they're usually good at, they're not good at right now. They're not good up front. That needs to be fixed. You fix that, everything else looks much better.
But their skill position players historically have been the problem against elite level teams. That's always been the case.
But I don't think I don't really think that's necessarily the issue right now. I think it's a lot of hey, open a hole, and everything else looks better because play action is easier when you're opening.
Yeah, if that's the problem at Wisconsin, then it's just like okay, open a hole.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is a game that, I mean, this score.
This could go in any direction, by the way.
Of all of the scores today, this is the one I think at the end of when that game was over, it shocked me the most. Georgia Tech 45, North Carolina 22. Georgia Tech outgains the Tar Heels. Now, Sam Howell did not have a terrible game. He averaged 7.8 yards per attempt. He threw for 306 yards. Georgia Tech averaged 6.1 yards a carry. North Carolina averaged 1.8 yards a carry and lost three fumbles. Georgia Tech might, I know my feelings are colored by them losing to Northern Illinois in that first week, but Georgia Tech could be much, much better than we realize.
What's up with North Carolina? Even if Georgia Tech is better, even if Georgia Tech is better than we realize, like North Carolina was, their over under for the year was for wins was 10. Like what's going on there? It's a very weird situation. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. I was really high on them coming into the year and it's just like, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
Well, I always thought if you get your whole offensive line back and you get the quarterback back, that losing the backs shouldn't be the end of the world for you. But it really has been a problem for them. Losing Michael Carter and Javonte Williams has been a huge problem for them. They can't run the ball like they did before. And when they can't run the ball, nothing else works either.
Yeah. You know, I viewed this game as a 59-point win. Not a 59-point win, but a 59-point scoring barrage that we were going to get from North Carolina. It felt like they overcame the weird first quarter or first loss, first game at Virginia Tech in a weird opening spot, and we're starting to get things rolling a little bit, and then you come out here and not only lose, but lose by three touchdowns to Georgia Tech. It's like, I'm not trying to take anything away from Jeff Collins and the mighty Yellow Jackets, but even if they are better than we think they are, that's kind of a crazy result to me. It's like there's something wrong there.
Well, they're just not as efficient offensively. Now, they looked like themselves against Virginia, which I don't think Virginia's defense is very good. If you watch the Wake Forest game on Friday night, Wake Forest just kind of sliced through them. Wake's defense was pretty good. We may have to get to the is Wake Forest the best team in the ACC conversation, or that might be one for next week. I don't know.
What about BC, man?
What about BC? That was a, you know, when they lost Jurkovic, I thought, okay, this is going to be trouble for them. But there's, I mean, won a few games without him. Grossel looked very good against Mizzou, but yeah, the ACC is in a weird spot. But here's the thing: BC and Wake, same division. They're going to play each other. They're all going to play Clemson. We'll find out.
Is Boston College going to play with Clemson next weekend?
I mean, is Clemson going to score a bunch of points on anybody? I don't think they are.
So the ACC, if being rational, is probably eliminated from the college football playoff discussion, right?
I mean, I don't like to do that in September, especially when a league has undefeated teams still. So I don't know that we can say that yet, but I think it's fairly likely that this is the first year of the college football playoff that will not include an ACC team. I think if we were betting on that, you and I would both bet on that right now.
Heavy favorites that there won't be an ACC team.
Correct.
You know, it's not easy to, I'm not trying to be disrespectful to BC and Wake Forest, but I don't think they're quite into the progression of their programs where they would be in that position. Yeah. So if Clemson's
and
out,
one of them's going to take at least one loss because they got to play each other.
That's correct. So, you know, Florida State's out. Is Florida State out? By the way, easiest bet of the weekend. Did we talk about that? I think I mentioned it. Louisville minus one. They were handing out free money this weekend.
Well, and the stands, oh Lord. Like it's bad. Now, Florida State did come back after going down by a bunch, but somebody tweeted at me, are you doing the math on this one now? Because that was, I wrote this story about Willie Taggart where I explained the math of his buyout and how they kind of couldn't afford not to fire him. And I don't think they have any cash to fire Mike Norvell, but when it's sitting there, I think it was 31-7 at one point. I think it ended at 31-23 or 31-24. But at 31-7, I clicked over to the game and I'm looking at the stands and they are empty. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think they have enough money to fire him, but if this gets any worse, you may have to figure out a way. Like,
how much does their 22 class matter?
Well, and that's the thing. They've got some true believers in that class, but I also think if you fire Norvell, you might lose some of them.
That's right. So do you give him another year, get those kids in your program, save some cash?
I have no idea.
Or is there a point where Florida State's too far gone? Because like, I don't know. Like even if Florida State keeps losing, can it get worse?
Every time it happens, will feel worse. And especially if they're non-competitive against some people. I mean, they're going to play. They got Syracuse. If you watch Syracuse Liberty the other night, Garrett Schrader, former Mississippi State quarterback, made that offense go. Now, they don't throw the ball very much, but they can run it pretty well. And maybe, you know, maybe Florida State can stop the run and have a chance in that game. But if you lose to Syracuse at home, then you've got North Carolina on the road. You got UMass. If you lose to Walt Bell, your former offensive coordinator, who him going to UMass cost you Sam Howell. I mean, come on. There's so many. There's ways this can get a lot worse, Ari. And then what do you do? Because they have the stretch of at Clemson, NC State, Miami, we don't know if Miami's any good or not either. Like Manny Diaz, depending on how the next couple weeks go, might not be there when they play. So there's so much in flux right now, and the ACC is just—it's a weird place. It is a very weird place, and now comes the existential crisis of, remember, they've never been left out. And the reason they've never been left out is they've always had one great team. I'm not sure they have one great team this year.
Florida State wasn't even on our list, man.
Well, I had to. you walked me into it, and I had to do it. So let's get back to the list now. Baylor beats Iowa State. Now, it was close. Baylor took a big lead. Iowa State came back. Iowa State had a two-point conversion there at the end. Could not complete the pass. But that's a huge win for Dave Aranda. And so, you know, I think one of the group texts that I'm in, somebody asks, is the shine off Matt Campbell? I'm like, no, because Matt Campbell still took Iowa State to a 9-win year, won the Fiesta Bowl with them, took them to the Big 12 championship game. Like, it's Iowa State. It's supposed to be really hard to win there. But is he a miracle worker right now? No, he's not.
Miracle seasons and sustaining miracle results are very different. I think it's very easy to be a prisoner of the moment and to view a miraculous year where you're on the verge of potentially winning the Big 12 as something that is maintainable or sustainable. And it's just a harsh reality that it's hard to do it twice. It's like the other sweetheart.
Yeah, that's at Iowa State, it's really hard.
And guess what, man? Indiana stinks too. Like the schools last year that were the sweethearts of the season, it's hard to do it. And like, I love Tom Allen. I'd hire him tomorrow. It's just really hard to do it when people are expecting it. And in the Big 12, where every single game is close for some reason, unless it's Oklahoma, and even now those games are close, it's just like really, really hard to get through that schedule and not lose 2-3 games or 4 games, you know? And it just, I didn't know that I would have pegged Iowa State to lose to Baylor, but it's not a surprise. It doesn't make me look twice. That's so on brand for the Big 12.
No, and I think the Big 12 will be fun this year because I think they're, if Oklahoma's going to play close games against everybody, it's going to be a lot of fun because you're just going to watch until something crazy happens. But I mean, it's just, yeah, when Oklahoma goes to Waco, that doesn't feel like a slam dunk anymore.
Nothing feels like a slam dunk.
I like it because Bohannon was carving up Iowa State's defense for a while. And Iowa State has a pretty good defense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is going to be, it's going to be a wild year in the Big 12. But I do want to head back to the Big 10 for 1 minute because we didn't talk about this game. And I think we mentioned this on Friday, and it was a line that we were like, this line looks really weird. And it was Michigan State by 5.5 over Nebraska. And sure enough, if Adrian Martinez doesn't submarine the guy who intercepted him in overtime to slow him down, then
it covers.
Michigan State covers. Michigan State wins by 6 in overtime with a pick 6. Michigan State, I believe, going into the punt return for a touchdown that tied the game late in the fourth quarter. If I'm not mistaken, at that point, Michigan State had gained 12 offensive yards in the second half. Nebraska's defense might just be really good. Like, they stopped Oklahoma last week. They certainly shut down Michigan State in the second half. But the offense can't seem to generate enough to get them over the hump. And, you know, I wonder how much longer they can take losing like that. Because that was a game they were in. There were chances to win it. And, you know, we've piled on to Nebraska plenty. I don't feel like this is a time to pile on to them. I feel like there is improvement happening. But if they keep losing like this, at some point, do you lose the team? And do they just say, look, enough of this?
Nebraska shows up in really bad spots and does really bad, dumb things when it means the most. You know, like the punt return touchdown with 3 minutes and 45 seconds left in the game. You're up by
you're 7 points at that point. You're stopping them every single time they touch the ball.
Get it together. You know what I mean? And I know I was joking about feeling bad for Vanderbilt fans, but boy, do I feel bad for Nebraska fans because they're so nice. They're so nice.
They got gut punched last week, and they got gut punched this week, and they,
you know, and I don't know how much these types of wins matter. Do they matter? Like, at a certain point, when you're a dumpster fire, it's just like, does beating Michigan State reel you back in, or is it too far gone at a certain point? And it's just like, I guess that's what you're saying.
This would have mattered.
Yeah,
this would have mattered. Like, they needed this because now they play the Northwestern. We don't know if Northwestern, the same Michigan State team that they played basically to a draw at Spartan Stadium, that team dominated Northwestern. So maybe this is going to be different. Maybe Nebraska can beat Northwestern. But after you just lost a game like that where you were so close, Scott Frost has got to get them back up. And I would imagine, given everything that's happened over the last few years, the stuff Scott Frost says to motivate, I don't know that it works all that well at this point.
I mean, at a certain point, though, like the Nebraska-isms, the dumb Nebraska showing up is a reflection of the coaching staff.
Yeah. No, you can't absolve them of anything. They should be much better by this point. It is year four. They should be better. They should not be losing like this. We don't know what Michigan State is. We don't know if Michigan State's any good. You know, they had a good fourth quarter against Miami. Miami may be really bad. We don't know. But Michigan State under Mel Tucker, who took over, I would argue, a worse situation than Scott Frost took over 4 years ago. Mel Tucker took over a worse situation last year and now has them better. Like, they are demonstrably better than what Mel Tucker took over. That's how you take over a program.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. I just say, like, at a certain point when it's Nebraska, it's just like, what else is there left to say? Other than sorry, guys.
I know.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about somebody quitting the team in the middle of the game?
Yes. Let's go to Columbus. Kayvon Pope escorted to the locker room during the Ohio State Akron game after a blow up on the sideline. He tried to go into the game, according to Letterman Row. He tried to go into the game in the second quarter, was waved off by Tarada Mitchell. And then back on the sideline, he walked toward the locker room before he was walked back by a staff member. And then he tweeted something.
Am I allowed to say it? Is this like, are we allowed to say it?
Use the letter. We try to keep the E off this.
F-bomb Ohio State.
Yes. Yes, F Ohio State. He tweeted that. And then he's like, but I love my teammates afterward.
And then deleted the F-bomb.
Yes.
Have you Ryan ever Day seen anything like that before?
Yes, there was a Florida running back a few years ago, and I'm blanking on the name, but it was the year that Jim McElwain got fired, who I think it was immediately after the game was tweeting, like, I'm done with this or something like that. And then he was done with this. So it's not completely unheard. During the game's bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
That's a little different.
I understand, too, because, like, you're talking about a senior who is built like a bodybuilder who's put in the time, and they're playing Akron and stick with the program and was supposed to have a big role, probably is upset about not getting into the game when they're playing Akron and they're winning by 40 or whatever, the, you know, obviously not the way to handle it, but what a crazy, the Ohio State beat is the most insane beat there is, and
the Tennessee beat says, "Hold my beer."
I think that Ohio State wins. That would be a good column.
No.
Craziest situations that happen at college football programs over the course of the past 10 years. We could go one for one if you want, and I guarantee you,
LSU's gonna. We're gonna have to call Brody Miller in on this. LSU's gonna want to have a say in this. Texas is going to want to have a say in this.
You know, maybe it's because I was on it, but
yeah.
Listen, just think about Ohio State the past 2 weeks. Player quits team in the middle or game. The quits team in the middle of a game and tweets out the F bomb. Player released from
quarterback
team.
Quarterback was hurt. Starting quarterback was hurt. They had to start a true freshman.
Player was released from team a few weeks ago for allegedly leaking the password to the film to a message board insider named Nevada Buck. And that's just the last 2 weeks. We're talking about scandal. We're talking about dysfunction. We're talking about craziness. A high school football player quit his team in the middle of the year, enrolls early, and then gets a $1 million NIL deal. Like, every single possible crazy thing that can happen, both positive and negatively, happens to Ohio State every single year. And it's like, my time on the beat ended with Tressel resigning over Tatgate, or began with
Yes.
Tressel, and it ended with the Zach Smith stuff. And it's just like, that's kind of like my, and just like, if you go through the years, and I don't even know if people remember this, but Ohio State had a commitment to their team who now is in the NFL, who went and visited Ohio State after committing, I believe, and then accidentally met up with him with a pedophile in the middle of his visit and then decommitted. Go look up the Alex Anzalone story. He's on the Saints now.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's nothing great. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, the craziest. Yeah. It's just like every possible thing that's weird that could happen at a college football beat has happened on the Ohio State beat.
It's, yes. Okay. It's a very convincing case. I still want to put that up against the Tennessee coaching search that had Greg Schiano, which tangentially was an Ohio State beat story as well.
It was.
Because Greg Schiano worked there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not saying that the other crazy things don't happen, but I just feel like Ohio State is in the front and center of crazy news cycles at all times over the craziest things. And it's unrelenting.
By the way, I don't want our West Coast friends to think we're not paying attention to the Pac-12. We are recording as we watch Pac-12 After Dark. I told Ari, let's start recording when I felt like Oregon had moved into control of the game against Arizona. But Arizona is driving down 24-10 and into Oregon territory, and it looks like they're about to get in the red zone. So Jordan McLeod, the USF transfer, looking all right. Also, Oregon State is beating USC 21-17 coming out of halftime. If Oregon State holds on, this is, you know, if Clay Helton hadn't been fired yet, we would have been waiting, Ari, until the end of this game to record this podcast. But they can't fire Clay Helton again. But can we say that Jonathan Smith doing a hell of a job at his alma mater, Oregon State?
Yeah, absolutely. I was texting Antonio Morales, our USC beat reporter, before the game. I'm like, why is USC only a 10-point favorite against Oregon State? And he goes, have you watched this team? And, you know, here we are. You know, I don't know. The Pac-12 After Dark is always something worth monitoring. And last week, the Hainer mania happened after we got done recording.
Yes.
So, you know, who knows in the 20 minutes after we're done recording tonight what craziness we're going to see from Arizona or Oregon or one of these crazy teams on the West Coast. And boy, do we love you guys.
I will come back. If something wild happens, I'll come back and re-record an intro. just to make sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Our producer, Cam Molina, is listening in and he's going, oh, God, no, don't make me step any later. But no, we trust us. We're going to make sure we take care of our friends on the West Coast as well. We're going to go back to the SEC West for a minute, though, because I need to celebrate something. The death chip is off the table. Thank you, LSU, for Mississippi State for touching the onside kick before it reached 10 yards, before it traveled 10 yards. That meant LSU could take knees and win a 3-point game in Starkville, which I don't know that I'm much more confident in LSU. I think their defense played well. They definitely, you know, had the correct defensive philosophy against an air raid team. Offensively, I'm still not sure I'm entirely confident in them, but I did appreciate that they just snapped the ball, let their better athletes be better athletes every once in a while, and it worked out for them. And I don't have to eat the death chip that RE ate last week.
Yeah, and I also heard you saying some things on this podcast in passing that were very, very LSU positive. So I'm trying to figure out whether or not LSU is your Texas.
No, they're not my Texas because you believe in Texas no matter what. I'm going to need LSU to make me believe again. Like I don't have any confidence against Alabama, against Florida. I'm not sure how much confidence I have against Texas A&M, Arkansas, Ole Miss. I'm not going to be like, they're going to kill it. No, I'm not.
LSU's 5-game stretch starting October 9th. Kentucky on the road, Florida at home, on the road at Ole Miss, on the road at Alabama, at home versus Arkansas. Have fun.
They got to play Auburn this week. Let's get into this. Auburn was losing to Georgia. Georgia State was whacking Auburn. Like, Georgia State was demolishing Auburn for a little bit. And you can say, oh, you know, this is a big come down from the whiteout. against Penn State. I don't care. Like, I expect the Jeremy Pruitt Tennessee team to lose to Georgia State. Auburn should never be losing to them. And they got bailed out by the officials. There was a review where they called something a catch that most likely wasn't a catch. But the more significant event that happened in this game is they did bench Bo Nix. Things were not going well. And so this is what I thought when it happened. And Ari, tell me if I'm wrong or not. Brian Harsin can bench Bo Nix because he's new there. Gus couldn't bench Bo Nix because he'd been there too long, had too many people in his ear, and was like, you can't bench Patrick Nix's kid.
The hardest thing about being a head coach in college football, just generally speaking, is the politics and the things that you have to avoid when you're talking about the quarterback position, because it's so delicate and so many people have visions of what it should be, not just from the fan and booster standpoint, but also your team. You know, people forget too that the players on the roster are human beings with feelings and opinions. And if you start messing around with that position, you risk messing around with your locker room chemistry. So, you know, I get that it's a first year and, you know, your team is losing to Georgia State. You got to do what you got to do in order to make sure that you, survive that. But yeah,
well, TJ Finley makes a miracle play for them to win that game. Now, if you look at the final score, you're going to be like, what are you guys talking about? There was a pick six as Georgia State desperately tried to score at the end. But TJ Finley was sacked no less than three times. Like, was dead to rights, should have been sacked no less than three times on Auburn's last offensive touchdown.
Does a play like that give you a starting spot the following week? Just that alone?
The fact that they won with him, yeah. And he also overthrew a wide-open receiver in the end zone right before that. So that seems fairly consistent for them. But here's the tricky part. Where did TJ Finley just transfer from?
You know.
LSU. So, I think he started just for the drama. Just start him just for the drama. The fun of, all right, you guys picked Mac Johnson. He left. He's at Auburn now. Let's go.
Man, and TJ Finley was like, wasn't he supposed to be like the next Jamarcus Russell?
He looked great. Remember, he started against South Carolina after Miles Brennan got hurt. Looked fantastic, but then did not look and got destroyed, by the way, by Auburn and Bo Nix. So all of this comes together. It's such a, the SEC, and especially the SEC West, is just an incestuous little ball of hate.
You give me somebody like that though, who's 6'6" and 260 pounds, and I'm in. I want to see it.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you. This is going to be, it's just going to be a fabulous game. I don't care. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't care what happens. It's going to be fabulous no matter what. So I can't wait. And look, I realize this is usually a review podcast, but we kind of need to talk about the schedule next week, because there's a chance that a lot of things can happen. It's one of those, you know, the established order is in danger. You've got Ole Miss playing Alabama. That's in Tuscaloosa. Matt Corral has been, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You and I have talked about the significance of the Michigan-Wisconsin game. Mm-hmm. That's happening. Oh, by the way, touchdown Oregon State. It's about to be 28-17. Arkansas goes to Georgia. And I realize I said, I think if they're banged up, it's going to be hard for them. But again, should we be doubting Sam Pittman at all at this point? And he also knows, at least Georgia's offensive linemen, he knows them pretty well. Cincinnati at Notre Dame. We've established that the people most happy about everything that happened this weekend, the Cincinnati Bearcats, should be among them. Oregon goes on the road to Stanford. I mean, that is going to be That's going to be an interesting. I know Stanford just lost to UCLA, but for Oregon, this is another big road test. You mentioned OU going on the road to Manhattan.
Kansas State. Yep.
Florida goes to Kentucky, and I would argue that Florida did not look particularly great in the first half of the Tennessee game. I think they looked better in the second half. Anthony Richardson did not play again. Dan Mullen said after the game the hamstring's okay, so I think we're probably going to see him against Kentucky. Boston College plays Clemson. That doesn't feel like a gimme at all. And then that Auburn-LSU game that I just talked about. All of that is happening next week. Oh, by the way, I mentioned that Ole Miss-Alabama game. Guess who's on the podcast on Wednesday?
I think I know. Is he a quarterback?
Matt Corral. That's right. The quarterback of the Ole Miss Rebels. And this is a guy that, if he continues playing the way he has, now he's got to avoid the games that he had last year. You remember he had 6 interceptions against Arkansas and 5 against LSU. If he avoids those types of games and just like he doesn't have to win them all, but if he plays consistently throughout this season, there's a good chance he's the Heisman winner. There's also a very good chance he's the first quarterback off the board in the NFL draft.
He's the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman right now, isn't he?
Yeah, but I mean, it's September. A lot can change. A lot can change between now
and let him have it. You better introduce him as that.
Well, but I think the draft thing is probably a little more, and I realize stuff can change there too, but if he doesn't have any sort of meltdown game with a lot of interceptions, and it seems like he's much better at taking care of the ball now, then I don't think there's going to be a question that he's the first quarterback off the board and some quarterback needy team takes him number one.
He is the reason why Arch Manning's going to Ole Miss.
Oh, you think he's going to Ole Miss? I think he's going to Clemson.
I have no idea. But I think I think that it makes Ole Miss a little sexier, though.
Well, you saw that
family ties.
The only person that Lane Kiffin follows on Instagram is Arch Manning. And Matt Corral. Matt Corral took a screenshot of that. And was like, Coach, come on. This hurts.
Yeah. I mean, recruiting is more important than keeping your quarterback happy, I think.
Well, let me give you a little preview behind the curtain. We've already recorded the Matt Corral interview. So he's going to tell us what you get if you pay $10,000 for a Matt Corral appearance. He's going to tell you what you get for your 10 grand.
He's on Wednesday. Yeah, that's when my babies do. So we'll play.
I want you listening to that in the delivery room.
Book it.
We may call you in the delivery room, and we'll put the audio in Friday's show.
Yeah, but things
are
you
now
screaming.
A dad? What's up? Your thoughts? I'll do the sideline reporter interview with you right after the baby's born.
Yeah, I've never heard of a better excuse to fly to Dallas before for a work trip. Have you?
I don't think I have. I mean, I think I've never been a sideline reporter, but I think that would be great. You in the gown coming out of the actually, I didn't wear a gown in the living room. They didn't make me do that. So I'm making it more of a sitcom event than it actually
don't
is.
You, I thought you have to wear scrubs.
I did not have to wear scrubs. So now it's Florida. There are no rules here, but
yeah. I mean, I'm in Texas, second place, right?
Ari, in all seriousness, your life is about to change in the best possible way. You never knew you could love anything as much as you will love that little girl when she comes out. I'm so happy for you. I know we may not be able to talk about college football for a little bit. Hopefully not too long. But I cannot wait. You're about to begin the greatest adventure in the history of the world.
Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it. And I'm glad that I got in on Saturday night to get this recap out there because it felt pretty good. And I'll be back way sooner than you think, I think. So I'm looking forward to it. And
you're on a roll. You're on a hot streak. Everything you gave out Friday cash. So
yeah,
I fully expect you to be back soon.
You never get up from the table on a heater either. So, you know.
That's exactly right. You're getting up from this table, and you're going to the living room, and it's all happening. Everybody congratulate Ari Washington. I want all of you tweeted him, Instagram, DM him, slide into his DMs. Just Tell him what he's got coming, because life's about to change. Thank you so much for listening. I'm back Monday with David Ubben for Football and Grits. Wednesday, you're going to have Matt Corral on this show. Tuesday, Nicole Auerbach and Michael Felder with Power Hour. Thursday, One True Pod. Friday, me and I don't know. It won't be Ari.
I'm so sad.
It's going to be somebody. We'll find out. It is going to be an amazing week, though. Amazing for Ari for amazing reasons. But amazing for us for the schedule I just ran down. This is going to be nuts. Saturday was great. Next Saturday is probably going to be even better. I love this sport so much.